play this stuff, man, because it reminds me of, you know, what I used to think when I would get down, excited about stuff or anything, or even angry. And so I would play this music and do bad things, think about being a bad person, etc. And it reminds me now when I play it, what I came from, how it changed, how it's not different. And for me, it's more of a powerful influence as it is what they're really saying. You know, back then it mattered to me, like, those little words that they were saying, but the energy that it brings to me, it's not the words they're saying. I mean, even though you lived it and I lived it in the same, and most of the shit they're talking about, half the guys rapping about it have never even lived it anyway. And so for me, I don't know. I don't want to say never, man, but letting go of that guy, the memory of what, you know, what you've been through, I think it brings to the present what you do presently. And you, if you don't look at it, you know, I think, if I can remember that quote I always said was, even on the deepest dives, you have to look up to appreciate what you're doing. And you know what I mean with that is you got to be a diver, obviously, you know what I mean? So if you're on a tank and you're doing a 50, 60, 100 foot dive, sometimes until you look up, you don't even realize what the hell you're doing. You know what I mean? You're just, you're like, holy shit. You know, so those small victories, you know, reminding myself, actually, you know, where I come from. And it's something I'd advise you to do on this podcast, man. As we're now live, you should be able to see me now, man.
There we go. Yeah, hey, man, I'm digging that shirt, man.
Well, I think I'm going to make the Hawaiian shirt like my thing now, man.
You should.
You think so? It takes the attention away from my face, so that's good.
Hey, nah, man, I told you, man. When you got cleaned up, I told you, man, you was on GQ.
Oh, man, it took my boy, oh, man, I don't know how long. It probably took him hours to make that shit look that pretty. Now I get to hide behind a microphone like this, and then if I can hide behind the mic like that and then wear this loud shirt that's just obnoxiously says surf and the beat, maybe we can take away from the fact, you know, that the face doesn't help sell this podcast. There we go. You remember the Home Improvement?
I was just about to say that, man. You beat me to it. I was just about to say my man from Home Improvement.
Yeah, what was his name, the neighbor?
I don't remember, man, but he was creeping. You would just see the eyes over the fence.
Yeah, some creepy.
I was about to say, you need like a little portable fence that you can just tie around the neck and it's right there. It's blocking right there to the eyes.
Oh, man, I think I really am, man. I'm going to rock the Hawaiian shirts from now on. So, but it kind of sucks because I do this minimalist shit hardcore now, man. So any additional shirt that I add is really a wrench in my system. It's pretty crazy. I was celebrating the fact that I'm finally down to where all of my clothes that I own fit in one suitcase.
Yeah. I remember we spoke about that. And I said, yo, I give you all the credit in the world. I applaud you for that simply because it's not easy. I'm trying to do it myself. And I promise you, I had a boxes stacked to the ceiling. And luckily enough, my uncle's going back to El Salvador, where my parents are from. And so, you know, when they go back there, they'll give clothes and shoes away. So I told my dad, I was like, look, man, this is what I'm giving away. And I stayed with maybe like give or take 5 or 6 pair of shoes. I know that's not on your level right now, but I'm trying.
No, man, look, I was that dude, bro. And I was worse than any, like, it was terrible. Now, there were friends of mine that, you know, had the new Jordans every 2 days, you know, shout out to you, you know who you are. And still's got a closet full like that, man. And, you know, I always like to think that I was rocking somewhat in style. And, you know, they made this fast fashion idea. You know, I talked to you about the documentary, that the True Cost documentary, that kind of flipped the script for me. That was it. When I watched what was really happening with our excess of clothes in the islands to the water and the soil where these kids were drinking and eating from, I was done, man. And, you know, I was good, right? You could always buy that so-so stuff at Target, right? And then match it as long as the colors were matching, right? I was always a Chucks wearing guy anyway. But, you know, I dropped all that, man. Now I'm still a Chucks wearing guy, but 2 pairs of Chucks is it. You know, it's 4 pairs of Dickies. I could probably walk through the whole inventory, but I mean, it's probably not a applause for me. It's like, it's weird because it used to not be, right? It was get the bigger closet. All right, man, look at that collection. Look at this shit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's kind of weird to have that difference to where I'm celebrating the fact where it's like, yes, one suitcase and a duffel bag. And that's it for me. And I'm good. And I don't need a closet or a space. And I don't know. It's a cool feeling. It's new for me.
It is, man. I can relate as far as it feeling like weight is being lifted off of you. Because today, matter of fact, called my boy up. I sent him a picture first because I just wanted to make sure he wanted them. But these shoes, they're in mint condition. And I was just like, yo, do you want them? I dropped them off. But prior to me dropping them off, I looked at them. I was like, I think I can still wear these. And I was just like holding on to it. You know what I mean? There was emotion attached to that shit. And I was like, man, I don't need this shit. So I dropped them off and that was it. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, it's weird what we attach emotion to. I was, I mean, I'll go ahead and put some, I'm a wuss on Front Street here, but I was proud of myself the other night when I threw out my senior yearbook.
Oh.
Yeah, I just let it go, man. I flipped through it a little bit, and then I was like, well, I do have a lot of memories from it. That's good. We'll see you later. And it was just, 'cause heavy, it's awkward. I'm like, when do I really look at that, you know? Mm-hmm. That's just small little things that, you know, hang on at the end. Like even my football card collection, I'm letting that stuff go. I mean, it's hard. Some of that stuff, it's weird, right? We like, have you ever thought about why we assign so much attachment? I mean, it can be as simple as a hotel room key card, you know, even things that don't even represent, you know, what that time was.
It's very true. And, you know, with my lady, she likes to make scrapbooks. So I have shit from, or she has shit from like about like 10, I told you we're almost at 10. So like 9 years ago, dude. And I'm just like, when I look through it and I tell her, I'm like, not everything needs a picture, babe. Like, let's just live in the moment. Cause she's big on it. You know what I mean? And it is what it is. She's, you know what I mean? She
likes. That'll be awesome though, man, for when she is, you know, maybe a grandma down the line sometime and, you know, they can pass that back. It's so digital nowadays, right? That like the holding of the picture is kind of rare sometimes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very true, brother. Very true.
Ain't me carrying that shit around though. I think it's cute as fuck. I do. I think it's awesome, man. The kids would love to see that possibly, or they'll just be like, well, send me the file, you know, or whatever. But
who knows what it'll be by that time when they get older.
Oh, my God, right? We move so fast. So what's up, man? What's been up with you?
Ah, man.
I'm glad we finally got to do the podcast. I mean, sorry I got kicked like 30 days, you know, after. And we finally wrapped up the damn book. So it's been submitted now. And now it's just turn around and putting the new covers on. So I can breathe. We can go back to like chatting once a week or so like we're doing.
For sure, for sure. And thank you for what you wrote on Facebook. But I feel like everyone needs a mentor, in my opinion. I'll take you for example.
Yeah, you must have been out of your mind, man.
Huh?
You must have been out of your mind, ass.
No, no, sir. I feel like a lot of people were in line, but they didn't have the balls to ask you. Maybe the rejection, you know, but I just said, you know what, with what I'm trying to do now, the new attitude, the new outlook that I have, let me just go out there and ask. And sure enough, you know, you didn't make the decision on drop of a dime, which I respect.
Oh.
You know, you took your time and I was happy that you said yes.
Yeah, I had to think about that, man, because, you know, it was cool as shit. I mean, thank you for having some idea that to learn something, maybe. You know, or what not to do, at least. I could probably help you there. But that was cool shit that you asked me. And I'm grateful as fuck, you know, and honored, man, to do something like that. So I had to take some time to call my mentors, man. I called Leo and Dr. Jan Burt, who are two of my first entering the mental health field. And I'm like, and they were like, sure, man, definitely. Just drop me some tips. And they're like, ah, now payback's a bitch.
Yeah, man. So, like I said earlier, I feel like everyone does, because like I said, for you, for example, if you felt like you didn't need a mentor, you wouldn't have written the second edition to The Cognitive Rampage. You know what I mean? Like, if you felt like you knew it all and you didn't need guidance from anyone else, you wouldn't have written it, you know?
Yeah. Thank you, man. That's cool. I did have to go back. I mean, the second one that's coming out, dude, is I backed it by, I tried to remember everyone's research I read and books that I read and get their names in there and quote those people and the mentors. I mean, shit, Leo is quoted, I think from page 7 to the end, you know, I mean, all the way through it. So yeah, I mean, you're right, man. I couldn't have written that book had I not had mentors like Leo and virtual ones like Stephen Kotler and Dr. Carl Hart, a bunch of them, you know, that mm-hmm. fed Dr. Mark L. Gordon, Dr. Rhonda Patrick. Man, I could go on, man. Just those are virtual mentors that I write about in the book. But yeah, I mean, so, I mean, I asked, when you asked me, what I thought about when you asked me actually was when I first asked Dr. Jam Burt. He's still a good friend now. And it was my second class, I think, in the master's program. And he just delivered a great class. I believe it was multicultural counseling. And I was just hooked. I was like, yeah, I dig it. This dude knows his shit. And I was a huge fan of Dr. Albert Ellis at the time. And Dr. Jam Burt actually got to work with Ellis up in New York, which where he was from. So I specifically remember walking out front, and this before I'd written the book or anything, which is kind of why I included it in the book, just walk up and ask. And I caught him outside. I'm like, hey, would you mind? And somehow we can organize it. And he was like, yeah. You know, we even started building the company together almost for a while down the line. But so when you asked me, I was like, fuck, I remember how kind of nervous I was a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, when I had to kind of walk up and be like, hey, I would like you to sacrifice some of the free time I know you don't have for free to tell me and teach me things in this field or about this one thing or about life, whatever, as if you don't have any time and I can't pay you anything for it. You know, it's a difficult thing to ask, you know?
It is. It is. And I'll say you had bigger cojones because you had to walk up. All I had to do was type with these little fingers right here and just ask you. You know what I mean? It was nerve-wracking because I didn't know what was going to come from it.
But it's weird the wave of mentorship, because I now talk to my mentors more and some newer ones in my life more since you and I started doing our little thing, since we did like a mentorship. And it was more, you were along the lines of, I loved it too, because you approached it with a reason. You said, look, I wanted mentorship. It wasn't about life, et cetera. It was, I'm starting a new business. I'm kind of moving here. We talked a little bit about some financial moves, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And you were more specific there, which is what I loved. You kind of came with a plan directly. You know, for me with Jan, it was like, teach me more about psychology, you know, as much as you know. And it was set the precedent. But since we started, it makes me call mentors now more often than I used to. Mm-hmm. As if like, all right, I got to stay on my game. You know what I mean? As if like, because I know you're also growing your business, Cameo Fitness, et cetera. So I'm like, all right, I have to keep, it's kind of neat how like you keep me on my fucking toes because you allow that mentorship. And now I reach out to mine more because I'm trying to do the same.
Yeah. It's funny how things work out, man. And, but like I was just talking about you the other night. What the hell was it?
Oh,
nah, it was good. It was good, of course, man. But I was just like, prior to me speaking to you on that business level, there were a bunch of things I didn't know about. You know, I won't get into details, but it was just a bunch of things that I didn't know about that you schooled me on. And I was like, had I not reached out to you, who knows if I would have ever learned that? Chances are I wouldn't have.
Yeah, because we walked through your business plan. We walked through the different types of investors, how to schedule, you know, how to arrange your company and all that. We walked through a bunch of different ideas with that.
Yeah, a lot. And definitely, I thank you for it. You know what I mean?
Well, you came to it. I remember after all I did was deliver the variables. I said, here's the variables, here's the equations, et cetera. And you went yourself, man, and you worked all those variables. You jumped on that competence, then searched out, you know, issues where it could apply. You came back to me and you said, well, you know, what I decided was actually to slow this whole thing down. And I mean, you like, it was perfect. And you brought that shit to me, man. I was like, fuck yeah, good idea. And you used what you had, put it in place, made a little bit longer plan. It was good. That was all you.
Nah, I mean, partially. But had I not spoken with you, those ideas wouldn't have sparked. You know, I wouldn't have those possibilities in my head to think of that. So you have to give yourself just as much credit.
And well, then I have to pay it forward and give credit to at least my big brother, who is a business concept development. He's like a walk-in law firm in his mind. And set up, he's been through all kind of businesses and setups of them and consulted for some. So a lot of that knowledge came from, you know, my big brother, who I mentioned in the book, actually. He's dropped more knowledge than I write in the book, but the one was contract out or subcontract out what you don't know for now. You know, and he kind of brought that to me of, you know, subcontract out the accountant, find somebody else to do the taxes, not just the basic corners or yourself or the easy, you know, find out whether you should open up a C corp or an S corp, find out why an LLC if necessary, and all these corporate veils, all that talk, man, my brother just, he drove that home for years to me. And so I would have to give that knowledge, at least a lot of it, a majority of it, to him. And also this guy, Matt Fitzgibbons, who I'm trying to get on the podcast, who was kind of a mentor to me in business, where when I first came back to Orlando, I would bring him these business plans of what I thought were business plans. And I would hand it to him all excited. And this guy did mergers and acquisitions. People would walk into this guy's office and basically try to buy a business or sell one. And shout out to Fitzgibbons and Alexander and Dr. Phillips, actually. But anyway, so I'd sit down all excited. He'd keep it for a few days and then we'd talk. And I remember one time he's like, all right, I'm really excited about whatever it is we're going to do. How are we going to do it? And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, you gave me a huge, thick marketing campaign, you know, a big giant, isn't this awesome? But you didn't have the numbers structured in here and all this other stuff. He schooled me on kind of, oh, okay. You know, beyond the, you know, the depths of the basic numbers, investment and, you know, easy stuff. But, so he helped out a lot. So I would say all that knowledge came from other mentors of mine, you know, not me per se.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's very true. And again,
you know, it means you got to start mentoring somebody soon, man.
I don't know about that, man. I don't think I'm at that level. If somebody would have asked, that would be an honor. But I don't know.
The fact is I think what the ones that should be in place to lead should be the ones that don't think they should be in place to lead. Somebody, I'm sure, said something like that before. So if you don't think, like, I mean, I honestly didn't think so. I came up with that new hashtag, dude. It was like YOMO, which is you only mentor once. So,
yeah. I was cracking up when I read that, man.
So fuck it. All right, I'm in. So you got, I guess, because I kind of see like this wave of it, you know what I mean? So if you're mentoring someone younger than you, you know, because, you know, you can maybe talk about your neighborhood where you came from, et cetera. Mm. But, you know, some young kid over there and bring them into a fitness, you know, area or whatever you do. I mean, you got to find something, I think. You got to pay it forward and pay it backwards, right?
Yeah. My fiance is trying to be a creep over here. No, come over here. Since you want to creep, say hi to my boy. Come over here.
Now, mind you, hold on. I'll let you talk so my ugly face comes off the camera. There you
What's
go.
What's going on? She's gone.
She's gone already.
She's being a creeper, man.
I was gonna be a creeper back and be like, so I know a lot about you and I've never met you. You've spent 10 years with this young man.
Throwing me under the bus.
What's that like, man, for real though? Being 10 years with the same woman since what, 15, 16?
Yeah, around 15. So I mean, I just turned 25.
Yeah, right. So 25. So since 15 years old with the same woman. You always talk good about her too. I've never once, and then we're live here now too, so I've never once heard you talk sideways about what she does or what she doesn't do. So I've always kind of respected that. Mm-hmm. And you know, what's it been like, man, you know, holding down the fort, if you will, for 10 years or growing the fort or whatever it is.
Holding it down has been different. I mean, because we kind of come from similar backgrounds. We don't really depend on other people to get things done. She's been very independent. So when we met, you know, we kind of just kicked it off. So things, of course, had to change. You know, she was able to put her differences aside and I was. And what I mean by that is when our son came into the picture and, you know, we made the decision that she was going to be a stay-at-home mom. And that meant that, all right, I had to, you know, definitely get on my ground. There was no slacking. There could be no slacking on my end. And, you know, I always told her, I just said, I don't want you to worry or stress about anything else. You know, I want you to be with him and let me worry about how the money comes in. You know what I mean? And it's still like that till today. You know, I've maintained, I've been blessed enough to support them. And, you know, now, as you know, I got a baby girl. So, I mean, but it you know, I don't ever try to paint a perfect picture because it's never been that. You know, we've always had our ups and downs.
Wait. We've always? You know.
God damn. Yo, I swear, I was going to have a little cheat sheet right here.
Yeah.
Don't say always.
Always, yeah. Yeah.
Right, you're right. Cut that out, man. We lie, but let's try to do something. Let's hack the system and cut that out.
I didn't want to interrupt your love rampage because it was deep, man, but I couldn't let that irrationality soak in that beautiful
you're right.
Sauna you were given.
I'm glad you caught me on that. But overall, you know what I mean? She's a wonderful woman. I can't say that I've been, you know, more blessed than to have her in my life.
And to me, man, that was a huge, you know, respect thing directly for me was, you know, the fact that being 15, 16, so young and changing, all the changing we do mentally, et cetera, and so many fathers that don't stay around, that just go do them, especially when babies come around and at that age, especially. And to manage to hold that down at such a young age for so long, that was me. Like, I'm like, fuck, dude, okay, you're asking me, man, but you're doing something amazing. And that was a huge, kind of a deciding factor almost for me, was what kind of family guy is he? What kind of dad was he? That was kind of my main thing. And the more I learned about that, the more I was just like, yeah, man, this is, cause I had respect then, you know, I had this admiration at even 10 years older than you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, it's really not many people know about it. I don't think I've ever posted that online, period. Because I'm not that type of person. I don't.
Too late now, man.
No, I mean, that's it. Is, yeah, too late now. But I mean, in the sense of posting statuses or videos or for the sake of attention or something of, you know, like that. But I don't like that. You know, I don't like the attention. I don't because I mean, it's just like, what intention do you have behind that by posting that? Do you really want people to comment and tell you how good of a guy you are?
Yeah. Yeah. And if people can be honest about it, or it's like, yeah, I'm trying to get some love. I'm trying to show off my baby girl, or yeah, that's on some people's perception is. And I do laugh at the ones that do try to deny that. They're like, no, it's for my family. I post for my family, and that's why I do it. And you're like, okay. quit fucking around, man. So that you leaning over the bike rack, you know, with the boots, that was all right. I hope that wasn't for dad.
Yeah.
You know? But it's some people, you know, do, you know, I know some couples, man, that argue about how they don't post enough, or they, you know, post too much. Even it's kind of weird how that kind of sets place. But yeah, I think if you can be honest, where it's like, yeah, I like it that whatever we talk about, somebody else listens to, and maybe it entertains them or pisses them off, or, you know, makes them forget about some shit they're dealing with for the day. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm honest about that. Yeah, I hope to post some cool information and content and, you know, help somebody maybe, or at least annoy the shit out of them.
It's going to do either or, to be honest. And I've always kind of said that to her. I'm like, man, post what you want. I was like, if you feel like it's going to ruffle some feathers, do it. I was like, it doesn't matter. I was like, if you continue to just live in that little, you know, shell, I was like, you know, you're always going to have some sort of stress associated with that, or some sort of tension that your body's just going to hold on to for forever. And I don't know, man, I've grown to become better with it. As far as, expressing myself, because like I told you before, you know, I wasn't always that person. I keep a lot of shit in.
Yeah. Yeah. How's that working out for you?
It's becoming better. Like I told you, I don't know, with you, you know, you've been able to, you know, get to some spots to where it was uncomfortable, you know? And I just said, all right, you know, there's never going to be change if I don't get out of that state of always trying to hold on to shit and just thinking that it'll magically go away one day.
It's funny how we do sit back. A lot of people do that with their businesses and life, everything, where they just kind of, you know, it'll just come to me one day. If I just keep doing the same thing or keep doing this repetitive deal, you know, it'll come to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's gotten better. Is there room for improvement? Hell yeah. You know, but with time. Yeah.
It's trippy how, you know, people that have been through, you know, difficult things in life and, you know, emotional, physical, environmental, whatever, how we tend to build this shell around us as if like everything's okay. We got it all together. Can't move me. How we're almost shaped to have to keep that, you know, as we get older, is rather than changing the perception of it or releasing those real emotions about it or talking about the things that really do make us afraid or hurt us, et cetera. It's man, I started squirreling off, but I think it's, you know, I don't know if it's odd or funny. It's just, I mean, I get it, you know, why people go through a tough time or life and then build this, you know, I'm made of steel thing, nothing rattles me. And till that just adds up to so many resentments over time toward people, toward yourself, even places, like shit that you do even, you know, it's like, God, like you got to get that shit out, man. Like, I call it purging when I talk about, you know, when you and I talk about sometimes is, you know, finding, you know, whatever that button is and being able to let that go, being able to be okay with what you're saying. I think it's a tool, man. I think it's something we need, you know, and you got to learn how to express that shit.
You do. And I feel like there's a fine line when it comes to expressing it to the right person or outlet. Because being that there's so many social media outlets, who or when can't you vent to whoever and whenever? You know what I mean?
Right. What are the ethics of social media ranting?
Yeah. And when it comes to social media, I don't put personal life problems on there.
Yeah. Everything I was talking about, actually, I was talking about personal. I wasn't even talking about social media. I was talking just as people, as individuals, who we express that to, whether it's to ourselves or to the person we've been with for 10 years. You know what I mean?
It
affects most people, man, trying to express what we really experience, man. I mean, you played hard the first couple of times we chatted, you know, about, you know, either what you had figured out or how shit wasn't fucking with you. You know, when, you know, I don't want to tell too personal of a story, but my daughter basically experienced something and walked by me one day and I was like, so how you doing? And I got the whole, I'm fine. When, you know, everyone knows fine is frustrated, insecure, neurotic, and emotional and walks by. And I'm like, well, knowing the life event that had just happened, you're just not okay. And I even had to call her back out and just say, so tell me about it. And it was like 2 seconds into it and it was Niagara Falls. You know, she was crying, she was letting it go, you know, and pouring it out. And I think that's also something I like to try to convince people to maybe at least try, is not to hold on to that moment for so long. You know, when you hold on to that toil, that regret, that shame, that bad decision, or that inability perception, when you hold on to the hurt, pain, and fear and just bury it, dude, that shit's real. Like, it leaks out. You know what I mean? It's like you're trying to hold down water pressure, and then one day it's like, that shit sprays out a little bit, and you're fucking shooting ants with shotguns. You know what I mean? You're freaking the fuck out, you know? And people are like, what the? The dude just barely cut you off, man. Like, whoa. Yeah,
that's all it takes. It's just one thing. And I was just talking, dang, dude, I'm sure you hacked my phone. You read my text messages. Because everything you're saying, I've been talking about lately. Maybe. No, but seriously, I was just talking about that.
It only takes talking about, sir.
It only takes one thing. You know what I mean? I said, you don't know what that person has gone through. You know what I mean? All it takes is if you call me a bitch and I was already on edge. Oh, man. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. You know what I mean? It takes one word, one action. That's it. You don't know.
You know, I'm onto this too. I actually had a discussion with the Subway general manager as they were making my sandwich. It was a great talk. It was along those lines of, you know, we're all kind of walking around trying not to be involved. Now, we'll pick up the camera and film the shit, but we're all like, oh, they're arguing with each other. Just keep walking. You know, you never know, right? And we're walking around with this whole idea, this fear of like, well, you never know. You know, you never know. So don't help anybody or change anybody. And I was talking to the general manager lady because this fucking asshole was driving his big Suburban. He was like a taxi guy and jumped out of his Suburban. He was probably in his mid-40s, you know, and is yelling at this 80-year-old dude who was taking his time backing out of a parking spot. Dude jumped out of his car on him, you know, as he was walking out of his parked car. And yeah, I had to stop for a minute, like, all right, dude, don't. You know, and he was kind of a dick. And then he just storms inside the Subway where there's a line and then just jumps in front of the line because he just needs change. Now, I started the conversation with the general manager while he was waiting for his change about the douchebag that was waiting for his change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Rather loudly. And but you're right still. And that idea is anybody a snap, it feels like, right? At any time, maybe somebody is just on that fucking edge. Now with jujitsu out in the air, with pistols everywhere, you know, it doesn't matter how badass you are or somebody willing to just swerve their car into you, you know? And it's, I don't know, how do we push that to the side? You know what I mean? That fear of stay to yourself or you might wind up getting shot because you don't know who's who. But yet stand up for the old guy, stand up for the guy who's cutting in line, you know, picking on the little person. I mean, then, you know what I mean? Like, how do we, you know, try to fucking pull that together somehow?
I don't know, man. I feel like it's the fear of what may come from it. You know what I mean? Like, not many people, there are very few that I know that don't think twice, which can be a good thing and a bad thing. You know,
greatest they'll just jump into it,
jump right into it. They don't need no question, no background to the story. They just jump right in, you know, and it, like I said, I think it's fear of not knowing of what's to come. You know, if you were to intervene in seeing something, you know what I mean?
Well, the definition, I talk about the definition of bravery being, you know what might happen, but you go anyway. And courage is slightly different, is knowing what may or may not happen, but you go anyway. But bravery is knowing what will happen, and I'm going anyway. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's that's missing, right, is that we do take the chance to interfere when, and it's the psycho guy who pulls the gun or something. But, fuck, I mean, I'm not saying I'd be the first person either, right? Because when we all get in that situation, we think about our kids at home, right? I'm going to put myself in some shooting situation when I got to get home to my, you know, my baby. So, you know, I even, you know, we could talk about how, you know, I'm the one, I'll be the guy. But, you know, until you're there even, you know, it's hard to not think about, I got to get home, get them home safe, you know, or some shit like that.
Yes, sir. And it really, it's crazy how, if you allow yourself to go down a rabbit hole, let's say if you were put in a position to where, you know what I mean, you need to go out and do something, you know, something that, let's just, you know, say it was involved hurting somebody else. You let yourself go down that rabbit hole so much, you start to talk to yourself and just say, my kids are going to be all right. You know, like, even if whatever happens from this, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm ready to do whatever needs to be done, and that's it. But then when you pull back and somebody talks to you, like, God damn, what the hell was I just saying to myself? You know, it's crazy how just like this, shit can change.
Well, but that's even a selfish emotion, you know, because, you know, we talk about how anything that you feel is created from what you think. And so when that person is willing to change their own beliefs that their kids will be all right without their father, without their mother present, one, which is just irrational as shit, unless they are seriously, you know, there are reasons sometimes where that is good. But I mean, generally speaking, you know, for a parent to then convince themselves in their mind and is willing to change the belief, to change the thought, to create the feeling that I need to commit violence or I need to do something or hurt somebody. You know, it's a scary place, you know, how we allow those emotional rush of feelings to rush us to do dumb shit, you know, to just respond so quickly, you know, and block out beliefs that, like you said, if we were stepping back for a minute, we wouldn't do that. You know, we wouldn't, you know, fight back on the guy or flick the guy back off driving or jump out of the car with him, you know, or anything like that.
It's so true. It's so true. And it's funny. I was listening to this, this one song earlier, and, well-known rapper, but he was just saying, he was like, that he wouldn't stoop down to someone's level that's playing that gunplay. He's like, I'd rather just kill him with success, you know, because he knows what he had to get through, all those trials and tribulations to get to the stage of where he's at now. Why throw that away just because pride is involved?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's hard, man. For a lot of people, I think I even referenced in a book a few times, like when you are transitioning, though, when you're moving to a different place in your life, be that spiritually, emotionally, or behaviorally, or all three, biologically, all four. When you're in that state of transition, we get real edgy. We become what I talk about is like in this stage of constant criticism. You know, we're quick to criticize everyone else and ourselves. We're transitioning. We're unsure about a lot of things, and our responses can seem like we're trigger happy. You know, you're walking around, you know, real sensitive and trigger happy. And a lot of times that's that uncomfortable where people think, when I say uncomfortable is the changes, it's about doing new things or something or testing yourself, when it's more that inner battle of testing yourself, when those rushing feelings you think you have that are creative, it's like somebody that cuts you off in traffic or, you know, does something that would set you off typically. That is the uncomfortable, that wanting to respond in a certain way, then holding that behavior in and allowing the new thoughts to transpire, letting what's rational flow through you. That is a moment of transformation. I mean, your brain literally rewires when certain thoughts begin to connect, when you witness certain behaviors and actions. And that's the uncomfortable. That's that hard part, you know? And you see some people sometimes when they want to do it and they don't, they're like, oh no, what, I can't, you know? It's like,
many people have been there, man, and I'm including myself.
Yeah, and it's just fucking real, man, because that's literally like Jekyll and Hyde right there. You're like, you're fighting it. So that's, I mean, that's literally your brain is going, think differently, don't respond differently, you know? And the more you do different, you respond differently and allow the brain to change the thoughts in that uncomfortable, that's that change. That's that fucking, that's that 2 or 3 day withdrawal feeling when you're getting off of the dope. You know, that's that feeling that I think that you maybe even referenced when you said why people, or how do we get people to cross that fear boundary that, you know, help somebody out or don't, is that very same belief, that same fear of what might happen. If I get off heroin for 3 days, I know what might happen in the first 24 hours. You know, if I change jobs, I know what may happen. If I leave, you know, this city, whatever, you know, that what might happen is so unknown that we just stay there. We don't get into the middle of it when some elderly person's being picked on, or, you know, we keep walking by when we see the weak being pushed to the side, and we assume that, well, we could get injured and killed, you know, and we'd leave our kids behind if we help somebody else. It feels to me like it kind of walks through this whole selfish eating ball, you know what I mean? Where it's like, fuck, you know, but it's that one thing, that fear of what could happen. What could happen if I trusted the man or woman next to me? What could happen if I did that? You know, that's, man, you're like right on both levels. What could happen if we do or don't, you know, fuck.
Possibilities are endless, my friend.
Yeah. Shit. That's kind of deep, man.
That's very deep, my friend. Took a dip.
No, I didn't. You spawned that shit. You spawned it, man. Because you mentioned about that one thing, that we're afraid of what we will be. And, you know, there's a lot of, see, I'm mentoring you, my ass, you know. So that afraid of what we will be, I think, also relates to people. I write about it in the book, actually, the second edition, is when people have a story of what they're about to become, what they're about to do, when over these next 6 months, I'll be in school, I have the thing, when they have this narrative of what they're about to do, or one day when they can get back to working on their movie or get working on their project, they have this story. And I think that they're afraid many times to pursue that, because if it doesn't work, the narrative that they've been saying for so long, or that even myself at times in my life, the narrative we say for so long, we can no longer say. So the story we're used to telling about where we're headed, what we're going to do, if it fails, well, then we feel like, fuck, that's the only thing I had left, was this want to be a whatever, you know, a nurse for people, or a writer for whatever. This is all I had. So I don't pursue the dream for fear of failing at the dream and not having anything else to thus put my hopes into.
Yes, sir. And this is why I asked you to be my mentor, because you take it to that deeper level and more detail, to where I can't maybe comprehend it that much in the into detail.
But you said it. You said it when you said it's the fear of what it might happen. Because what might happen is we fail. What might happen is I'm successful. And then what if it's not as pretty as we fucking thought it would be? And as we painted it to ourselves and our family and everybody else around us, we achieve it. And we're like, fuck, this didn't work. Nothing like I thought it was, right? So we build even, well, I think what we're talking about is the difference is, I really got to actually do it in the second edition separate. I really wanted to create a clear present idea about when I would say changing or reframing thoughts to be positive and rational. I switched them to be positive but rational, because a lot of people can change what they think and it sounds good. It's positive and it sounds good. But, like, you know, for instance, remember never to lie. Sounds like a good philosophy, but is it rational? Good luck. You know, you're going to fucking lie. So yeah. We don't want a life philosophy to be based in even a positive irrational belief, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think people also are careful about painting the positive irrational belief of, once we make this business, or once I can do this, then it'll be mansions and dollar bills will be free forever. And, well, I can't try that, because if it's not that, well, then I lose the story.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I give you this a bit of a wisdom. I think the rest is just me talking shit, but the rest of that, I think, is just because I got 10 years on you, for the most part, doing that is chasing different dreams, chasing ideas, and painting a movie, if you will, man, like a director of my own shit. So for me, as the older I've gotten, I used to hold on to ideas or dreams, et cetera, even business creations or whatever, for so long as if it was it. So a lot of times when I'm preaching or I'm ranting, man, it's right back on me, man. It's counter transference, you know, where I'm talking to myself and about myself. So early, I remember holding on to ideas like list52.com, for instance, and Primal Need, things I just should have let go that defined me or defined what I was doing. And now as I've gotten older, it's like I jump on that first idea that I think feels good, or then I'm a avid chess player. I play out my mind and I go for it and just move into that. And it's not as romantic as people make that shit sound. You know, you lose your ups, your downs. But for the most part, it's me trying to say, hey, I get one fucking ride on this motherfucker, and somehow we get to experience different perceptions of lives through what we do for a living. So I've moved through so many things, you know, of what I've done for a living, that it feels like I've got to live multiple perceptions almost.
Yeah. And it's like, you'll almost be damned if, you know, you go through this life and you don't do what you set out to do. You know what I mean? Like,
why I set out to do a lot of shit.
Yeah.
That was my philosophy. It was like, you know what? I don't need to set out to this one thing to make sure I accomplish, because after it's over, well, then what? So for me, it was just like, I generally do what I'm going to say I'm going to do, but sometimes not right when I say I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've talked about the road tour and all this other shit. And you know what? I actually called you first to talk about it. And I'll announce here what we're trying to do, if that's all right with you.
Of course.
Yeah. So the older I got, I guess to close that back point, is the older I've gotten, the less I've held on to concepts and ideas that no longer made me feel good, just to push them because I said I would do it. I've let projects go much faster the older I've gotten, and been able to move to things to be able to find what I love to do right now, which is write and podcast and meet new people and chase competence and write. So, I mean, I've moved to that now, but I think if people hold on to things too tightly, and like whether it's Cameo Fitness for you or some of the other ideas you work on, or anybody else out there that works on something like that, don't hold so tightly to that idea. The more you learn to let those go, the more you find new adventures and new industries and new places with different people. And that's kind of been my philosophy really for a long time, man.
Yeah. And when you shed light on that, you were telling me that you posted it too, but telling yourself training yourself to let things go that you love, you know, not to have that attachment so much. And, you know, that it will come. There will be a point in time when you may have to sooner than you may like. And that to me has been probably one of the hardest things to swallow, to be honest, you know, because I caught myself. I was about to say, I always.
Yeah. See, but that's the training that meant for me. That post was meant toward my minimalist lifestyle, was letting go of those little league home run baseballs, letting go of the football cards, letting go of, you know, yearbooks, et cetera. That for me was things that I loved or I thought represented me.
Yeah. And it's one of the hardest things to do. It's much easier said than done. Anyone can talk a good game and say, I'm going to go home and give my fucking shit away, period. And when it comes to that point in time and you sit down and you tie those, it can be a fucking shoestring to the memories that came with it. You know, it's like, it really doesn't take up much space. I can just put it in, you know, the corner of my sock drawer or something. It's the truth. You know, there's so much emotional attachment to shit that we shouldn't have it to, but we do. And it's very, very hard to train yourself to potentially let go of something that you truly love.
Especially if you believe it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you believe it to be hard.
Yeah.
I've created a lot of times making it harder than it was, you know, let those things go. So, you know, we can make things harder than they truly are. You know, I would also, you know, tell You know, the devil's in the details. And when you find yourself mentioning the details and why you can't do something, for the most part, you're getting turned the wrong way. You know, instead of trying to find ways you can do it, you know, finding ways you can make something happen that it doesn't anchor you. And I'm a realist too. You know, I'm a rationalist per se. And a lot of rationalists are considered not very romantic, but that's the idea of making something sound positive, but rational, not just positive and optimistic, but fucking terribly irrational. And you're not going to achieve that, man. I mean, you might, but probably not. So, I mean, you can set those standards up so fucking high to where it's just irrational to even assume that we could always or never tell a lie or never lie to someone, you know, or whatever it is, the whatever standards or expectations we set for ourselves and even other people, man, even the same. You know, I this all got me ranting on just trying to tell people to flow with whatever life brings at them and whatever brings at them and just in. Literally take on new ideas and don't hold your personality or who you are to some identity of a company or a creation or even competence or even something that someone knows, you know, that was been the hardest for me, you know, from, I would say from, you know, 29 to 30 ish. It became a little easier to move like that. But in my early entrepreneurial days, I was holding on to nightclub businesses. You know what I mean? I was holding on to being into that scene period. And there were other scenes that were calling out other industries. And I just stayed so horse blinded because I was going to build this fucking thing. You know what I mean?
No, I definitely know what you mean. I can relate to it because I used to be the same. I used to hold on to a lifestyle that I had to be hard and there was no way around it. You know what I mean? I couldn't show emotion. I had to do what I had to do. And if you called me, you can guarantee I was going to be there. It didn't matter what it was for, whether that meant, you know, us potentially getting hurt, being in jail, whatever that may be. But I held on to it because at that time I was young, I was immature, I was foolish. And I just thought to myself, this is what I need to do, you know? And, as I grew older, you know, and my brothers played a big part in that too. You know what I mean? But, my brothers did show me, you know, that was one of the first things that they did show me is just how the snakes move. You know what I mean? Just those essentials that you need to know if you come, you know, if that's the life you want to live. Not to say I was out there on, you know, in the corners every night or anything, but, you know, I definitely, you know, was surrounded by that at one point in time. And it you know, to have that eye-opening experience that as you grow older, it's either hit or miss. You change or you don't. You know, if you're not lucky enough to have someone to steer you in another direction or sit down and talk with you and tell you, look, man, this is what the fuck you're doing. Like, straighten the fuck up. And if someone who doesn't want to change at that time, they're not going to. You know, they're not going to. If they don't accept it, there's no way in fucking hell that they're going to do it. So I definitely know where you're coming from. Holding on to shit that was just pointless and useless and it served no purpose.
I like how you curb that more personal. You know, I was talking, you know, about companies and success and achievement. And I like how you can do that personally, this image of who we are. That's one of the fucking things I hate too. Well, that's just who I am, Adam. Ah, fuck. Well, you're concrete, narrow-minded, and not changing. That's what I heard, you know, is that acceptance of a persona. This, we must be this way because of this, right? We rationalize some reverse domino effect with our future observation of, well, I'm always going to be this person because this is what I came from, you know, due to this. And I like how you pointed out letting go of the personas of even athletes. You know, that's where athletes' depression came from, really, was the more I investigated that over the years was based on the ideas of identity dissociative disorder, of identifying with other things other than the personalities of who we are, what we love, our morals, values, but yet the identity of something else, of we are this or we are that. And our society's really pushed that. And on athletes, it's you are that athlete. You are the quarterback. You are the number one pick. You are the all-star. You are the Hall of Famer. You're the linebacker. You're the whatever, first-round pick, third-round pick. And you're the beast, you're the whatever, right? We even have nicknames for them. It's not even, it's so-so, the who and such. And, you know, so the identity that gets concreted to the athlete is that idea. And then knowing that athlete is not a lifetime job, when that does come to an end, shorter for others, longer for some, whether it's injury by choice of your own or whatnot, you know, that identity is shattered. You're no longer that. And that has a totally different effect on the individual over the lifetime, especially if you take an athlete that's been one since, say, 6 or 7 years old, or even from high school, and they played into their late 40s or something, or late 30s, or whatever. And when you remove that, man, it can be physiological detrimental. They're detrimental physiologically. You know, your body's responding to hypervigilant responses and routines like fighting, hitting the bag, running on the treadmill and pushing the sled, et cetera, pushing the weights. And you literally have biological responses to the loss of that. Then the mind goes. And that's kind of what got me into that, is looking at the athlete from that direction, is losing that.
And it ties back to your B2B principle, because if I'm, for example, being told that I'm the fucking greatest, you know, that's my belief. And then I'm going to behave like that. Yeah. You know, I'm going to behave like I'm the greatest. You can't tell me shit. Mm-hmm. And then you bring a friend along that wants to be like, yo, you're not the greatest, you know? And then you've come at my belief. So I feel offensive, you know, and that's what you say. You know, you kind of have to break that belief, that, you know, you have to be willing to reposition or look at that belief in a different manner, you know? And that's been one of the biggest things for me. And I can say that across the board, like whatever I believed, I'm like, all right, I'm going to give this a chance. And I'm going to think outside the box on this one. I'm not going to be so narrow minded and naive to think that what I believe is correct, you know? And I promise you, man, when I get around the fellas that I've been blessed to be around since middle school, early high school, good men, good, solid men, you know, I share this information, you know, because I know they're humble enough and eager enough to learn something when I say it. And it's not just because I say it, because it would be the same in return if they said it, you know, and I love to be surrounded by people like that.
That's hard, man. The hardest part, I mean, I even write early in the book, look, the hardest fucking part of people is there's no truth. I mean, we have scientific whatever, right? So not philosophical. I mean, it philosophically, from anything is subject to human interpretation and perception. So if, you know, the hardest part, though, is going, nah, bitch, I was there. I know what that shootout looked like. I know what that bullet felt like. I know what it felt like being whatever. I was there. So you can't take that from me. It's that people even will tell you that. You can't take that from me. Yeah. And there's kind of like, wow. We hold on to that perception of what something was, even though we know other people have been through similar ideas and similar problems and have excelled from those problems. You know, certain environments where certain kids come from, it's expected that they fail, and all of a sudden, holy shit, they make it. You know, what's the difference really? I mean, is it really the extra little aunt, uncle, or is it the perception? Did the kid say, hey, because I had this shitty part, that's why I'm able to do this? And the other one just kind of said, well, fuck it. It's my environment. It's what I'm supposed to do. You know, to question that belief that, hey, that thing I experienced, or this narrative that I tell about my life, who I am, what my parents did, what my community doesn't do, what my teachers did. If we tell that shit, I mean, it's a hardcore way of going like, I'm not questioning myself at all, ever. I'm just going to, well, that's just who I am for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's just who I am, man. Rose eyes every time. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's hard, right? Now when you catch people, you'll hear them a lot say, yeah, that's just who I am. I'm like, fuck. No wonder.
God damn it.
No fucking wonder.
Bring out Rampage. God damn it. Go home and read this shit, man.
Because I remember that for me, like, it was similar to like asking for a mentor, right? It's that unknown question, because we don't really know why. And we don't want to look at ourselves and be like, why the fuck do you believe that? And why the fuck is that always true? And you're like, you don't want to do that shit. So you ignore it. You stay away from it. It's always asking. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like the basis of most of the bullshit we suffer through comes from having to choose or ask a damn question. Mm-hmm. You know, ask your boyfriend, ask your husband or wife or whatever. Ask them that question, or ask your boss for the fucking raise. You know, fuck the toil. Just ask the fucking question and make a damn choice, man.
Mm-hmm. That's what it boils down to. It's like, well, and really, if you were to be around me, man, you would be like, fuck, how many times are you going to say that a day? Because a lot of shit that goes on doesn't matter. You know, if something has already happened, you'll catch me in the background. It is what it is. Like, I will repeat that throughout the day. It is what it is because it's already happened. There's no point in being a bitch to moan about it. It's kind of like, let's move on. And it's kind of like your approach to the Dollar Mental Health Club.
I'm gonna apologize to you for this one. My young Jedi.
And what?
I'm going to apologize, my young Jedi, to you for this one.
I feel like he's about to shatter some shit. But, I feel like I'm about to click the button because it's going to make me look dumb. A little bit. Go ahead. I want to hear it. Go ahead.
Well, I specifically actually write in the book that the opposite statement or the exact similar statement to it's just who I am is saying that it is what it is. And that saying it is what it is, well, kind of says whatever you say it is that defined perception rather than it is what you make it. So I think you're trying to say the same thing actually by saying it is what it is, meaning it can be whatever it wants to be. So I think you're in the same realm rather than how most people use it, which is, hey, it is what it is. Like, it was a shitty fucking thing and that's what it is. When, well, not necessarily. It doesn't have to be a shitty thing. It can be whatever the fuck I make it, not necessarily whatever it is what it is.
Exactly. No, and that's exactly the approach that I said.
That's why I thought I picked up.
Exactly. And because...
My fault then.
No. You wouldn't have known unless you said something. But at the end of the day, it's kind of like I got my foot ran over and nothing happened. I'm like, it is what it is. Like, I'm okay. You know, it's all it boils down to perception and how you want to perceive it. You could be like, man, fuck you. Like you know, you go off and, you know, but it boils down to how you want to perceive
it. And I just did it. I perceived what you said from what it is with my interpretation and see, completely did the opposite of what I tell people to fucking not do or to do. I mean, holy fuck, you see? I told you, man, you got to be humble as fuck to realize, fuck, I wrote the book on this shit and I still fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
Son of a bitch.
It's a beautiful thing, though. You can't lie. To be humbled. And not just, I'm not saying right now, but in general,
Aware. I'm just aware of like, fuck, I just did the same shit I told people not to fucking do. I use my own perception of the statement. Son of a bitch. There's going to be like 35 editions of the Cognitive Rampage.
Oh shit, man. I'll read them all, man.
Man, fuck. Well, we can just chat about it. I wouldn't subject yourself to that, man.
Shit, yeah. That's funny.
It can be a dose of authentic revelation. You see what I did there?
Yeah, man, it can be. That's funny.
I changed the tagline too. The subtitle to the book is no longer a dose of authentic revelation, but a scientific approach to self-discovery, change, and life optimization.
Jeez. Okay.
It's a fucking mouthful, but I'm copycatting from one of my favorite authors, man, Stephen Kotler. And the book Stealing Fire is very simple but vague. And then a very detailed subtitle about, God, there's so many experts from Navy SEAL 6 and the Mavericks and all these amazing badass fucking squads. And it's like three sentences long. So I'm like, you know what? And when you looked at the Cognitive Rampage, that's a vague statement. And so is a dose of authentic revelation. I mean, it sounds good. It's a poetic little fucking sound good thing. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't fucking tell me what it is. Yeah. And so the more I looked at that, I'm like, Cognitive Rampage, that's vague as shit. Cool. So I like how it sounds. I know what it means. And then a dose of authentic, oh, that's real poetic and rapper and shit. But what the fuck is the book about?
I hear you, man. I hear you. But I know this second edition is going to be off the chain.
I can't fucking lie, dog. It is really fucking good. I'm not front. I'm standing behind
it. Trust me, man. That's why I keep hitting you. I'm like, yo, we good.
This shit is money, man. It's the proof has been submitted now. So I love the new cover and shit too. So it's been heck, man. And Dollar Mental Health Club too, man. That's toward the end of July. I guess why I'm on the fucking things. I will announce tentatively that the Cognitive Rampage or Cognitive Road Rampage tour, which is 60 days around the rim of the entire United States of America, is gonna happen. Hopefully, we pull out April 10th. And the first 30 days, we leave April 10th and are headed toward Denver, Colorado by May 5th. That's still leg one. And then from there down to Huntington Beach, because I want to stop by and see my brother in Anaheim Shout out to my brother, Anaheim, Cali, and come down from Colorado, see that, and then go south from Huntington, then ride the Pacific Coast Highway all the way to Seattle, basically, as far as close to Seattle as I can get to. And that would complete the 30 days. So from Orlando to Seattle and those couple stops, stopping at all kinds of colleges and universities, talking to the experts, and I'll get more into what that's about. But then the second leg will come 2 days later. We'll leave from Seattle, headed to Bangor, Maine, all the way up the top to do that in 30 days. And the last 2 weeks, I'm probably taking the fuck off vacation, and I'm going to ride 2 weeks from Bangor, Maine to New Smyrna Beach, and I'm going to get a surf house for like a month or two. So everybody's welcome in July and August. If you want to, reach out for us. But then we have a drop-in surf house. So if you want to come surfing in the summer at New Smyrna Beach, hit us up. The house is open. Everybody's welcome. But that's at the end of the tour. So what we're doing on this 60-day tour, bro, this is I'm excited, bro. You see, I'm starting to get all hyped up. Yeah. Is it's a real deal, man. It's a cause. We've managed to switch the Cognitive Rampage, the podcast, if you will, to a nonprofit. So we switched to a 501(c). A wonderful lawyer who I'll give you the name for and endorse when it's all done has donated his time to do so and has worked a deal with us. So that'll be done by April, early April. So we have sponsors already lined up where we're going to plaster it. I'm just going to simply be living in a fifth wheel that I'm pulling behind a brand new truck. It's a brand new fifth wheel as well. And I'm just going to live in that thing for 60 days and travel, basically, like I said, the entire rim of the United States. It's like shopping at the grocery store. The best parts are on the outside. You know what I mean? You shop where it's naturally and healthy, on the outside.
Uh-huh.
The middle, watch out, a little process there. No offense. I'm just kidding. I lived in Tennessee too. But I think the second tour that we end up doing is going to go through middle America, where we're going to cross through the middle. But anyway, we go around, and what I'm trying to do is I'm going to go to all the colleges I can and universities along this route. And I want to get to the real facts and the real research behind the top mental health diagnosis, behind depression and anxiety, addiction and PTSD, because I want to question about trauma theory. I want to see how linked to PTSD and addiction it really is. And I already said depression, anxiety, and bipolar and ADHD. Those are the major diagnoses happening. So I'm going to go to the departments, go to the actual doctors that are training the young ones that are coming out in today, go to their labs, go to the research, interview them, interview the depression experts from neurology to sociology, psychology, psychiatry, and get the real facts, the real numbers about that, about the mental health diagnosis and how they're treated. How do you come up with a diagnosis, really? What is the most scientific way to prove that you have these diagnoses? What are the treatments that we have available? How effective are they? I mean, are they really working? What should we be doing? What can't we do? And I want to get it from the experts. So I'm driving, hitting every college along the way in those 30 days on the first leg from Orlando to Seattle, stops in Denver and every other place along the way. Where are we at? Give me the real facts. That's kind of what we're doing. And then the second leg is the same thing. I'm hitting all the universities around the rim. And I'm giving away all my speaking shit. So I'm not charging anybody to speak anywhere. So anywhere along that path, we're going to have on the website, adamlowry.com, where I'm at, where the map is, where we're headed in the route. So you'll be able to see. So if we're coming by your city, your group, your organization, your rehab, your school, doesn't matter. I'll bring the Cognitive Rampage bus through that motherfucker and free hour on the house. I don't have to curse. Don't worry. I keep it clean too. But in delivering the message, man, about what we're learning and really, because what I get tired of, bro, was, it sounds bad, but the idea of taking money from people to bring awareness of mental health. I think we're all fucking aware that mental health exists. So what are we fucking donating to? So what I want to do is rather than raise awareness about mental health is along the way, when we run into these research labs, to these schools and these departments that are really making effective change with the facts they're doing, with the research they're putting together in any one of those areas, PTSD, addiction, bipolar, anxiety, depression, ADHD, those major ones, that's where we're focusing. But we're going to then donate to that lab and that organization. So along the way, we're trying to fund these smaller organizations, smaller departments, smaller university labs that are really working on cutting edge shit along the way. And so that's kind of my gift in return to them coming on the show. They're coming on the show to talk about it, tell us what their research is, walk us through their labs, et cetera. And in return, we're going to donate to either their lab, their department if they need it, or any nonprofit that they think is doing the best in their work. And that's kind of trading. And wherever I'm speaking, I promise, dude, I'm not selling one book. I'm not taking books with me to sell. I'm giving away t-shirts and I'm giving away books wherever I fucking drive. I'm not charging anybody to speak anywhere. I'll speak to anybody on any topic related to this mental health. So what I may be seeing is this. I want to get to the bottom of a couple things and question things, but get the facts, man. Fuck, I get excited, dude. I leave April 10th, be in Seattle by May 10th, hitting all those places along the way. May 12th, I pull out and ride my ass to Bangor, Maine, cutting through Chicago and New York as well, dude, for the last 30 days of that leg. That's what the fuck I was going to announce. That's what I hope the hell comes together in the right time. It's moving so fast with a lot of help right now, and it really may fucking come together and happen, dude. Sorry for the long fucking rant.
And, no, sir, you needed to.
And the advertisement.
Nah, man, you needed to, man, and I couldn't think of a better person to go ahead and do that. You know what I mean? Go ahead and dissect that information from those professors, from those colleges, you know? You're the man, dog.
No. Well, I'm going to ask the tough questions. I'm going to be like, so how effective are fucking antidepressants? How accurate are antidepressants? How do you know what depression is? How do you measure dopamine? Show me the brain scan that tells me you have this mental health disorder. Now, I am open. Dude, I hope I discover the coolest new diagnosing devices to where mental health diagnosis becomes less theoretical. I mean, I hope I come across these machines that can do to prove this. This would save so much, you know, so I'm trying not to walk out and be biased, you know, about what I want to find. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to find real help, new shit that should be implemented, but it's too expensive or, you know, fights against the typical treatments that are out there. And I mean, I want to be able to answer that. No, it's just not in Florida, Joe Rogan. That actually have circled the United States. I felt bad that I couldn't answer that. It was only in one state. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, it's so passionate of a movement for me to where I got to fucking know. So I'm hitting every state around the rim, you know, getting the real facts out about this shit, man. I'm fucking excited. I'm kind of nervous. But, you know, this is the last podcast in this cognitive cave, dude.
Right on, brother. Had to be that way.
Yeah. You are. You're the last show in this cave. There's been two caves in the history of the Cognitive Rampage. And
I remember the first cave. It wasn't set up like this.
No.
I remember because I remember tuning into the episode 69.
Yeah, when Audi fucking did Illuminati. That's what the fuck he did. Mm-hmm. He Illuminati'd Adam, dog. I was like, wait, what? I'll never forget that motherfucker for that day when I said, but Audi. It's what makes everybody else happy, right? It's what fits the person. And he goes, no, that's what I'm talking about. And I went, oh, okay. So just one thing for the thing. And he's like, yes. And I'm like, whoa, you got some balls, bro. I was like, okay, I'm listening, dog. You got me. All right, I'm all ears. Yeah, that shit, I did not. I mean, he even called me, dude, like a couple of days before the interview. And he goes, hey, you know a lot of people don't like me, right? I'm like, yeah, I saw a little bit. He goes, but there's those that love the shit out of what we're doing. And I was like, dude, I'm not trying to prove either one, man. I just want to hear. I'll teach my ass, man. I just want to learn. Your shit looked fucking real. And now look at me. Now I'm driving to fucking Seattle in 30 fucking days. And actually what I'm hoping to do is along the way is find FP practitioners that are either on the route from Orlando all the way through kind of an upward route toward Denver, Colorado, then Denver back down through Las Vegas to Anaheim to Huntington Beach, then up the Pacific Coast Highway to Seattle. That's leg one in 30 days, April 10th to May 10th. So if there's any FP doers out there, practitioners, hit me up. Let me know, like, if you're along the route, I'd love to swing by, chat with you. We're also making a documentary on this. So my old producer maybe returning. My best friend for life, Danny Mack, he may be joining me on the first leg with his big badass camera and doing some sort of documentary on this shit too.
Yeah, there's definitely, off the top of my head, I can tell you there's a practitioner out in Colorado. I can't remember his name right now to save my life, but there definitely is. So I'm more than sure you're gonna find a few out there. You know what I mean? I told you, man, come out here to Maryland, and you probably
I'm coming there, man. So that's the second back into the leg. So what I'm gonna end up doing is I cut through New York and go up to Bangor. After we ended at Bangor, more than likely we're not gonna do a third leg to where it'd take me about 2 weeks. I'm just gonna take some time off of actually having a podcast and do what I'm doing, get the documentary out. But coming from Bangor back to New Smyrna Beach for the Surf House is just kind of 2 weeks where I'm gonna just take my time because I have the trailer and all, and I'll just come by fucking Maryland, man, and see you then. But that's a ways away, bro. I got 4,000 miles to put behind me. I'm 8,000 by the time I get there.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's exciting, man. Like I told you, it is. It's maybe it gets you a bit anxious, a bit nervous, everything. You know what I mean? But the fact that you're going out there and doing it is crazy to me. I told you, I was stoked when you told me. I figured it was something like that because we had spoke on it.
Yeah.
I thought it was what it was previous to that. But you know what I mean? I'm glad that you're getting out there and doing that, man. You need it and you deserve it, man.
Oh, it's going to be fucking, I don't know what it's going to be. That's what I love about it, man. Is like, I don't know. It's only 60 days on the road anyway, but for the most part, this is going to be life for me, to just be honest with everybody that's listening. This is just going to be life for me. I won't, be at the home. So for me, I'm taking my home with me. I'm literally turning to a full on minimalist, if you will. And there won't be a home for me, essentially. Maybe my mama's house in Sarasota, but for the most part, man, I plan on living this way for a while. So it's not just a 60-day tour. So when people are listening, it may sound like, I had 60 days, you punk ass. I travel the world for, you know, X amount. And for real, this is going to become life for me for a while, doing that kind of thing and living like that. So that's why it's a little larger, you know what I mean, than just 60 days for me, man. This is a whole lifestyle change for me to the fullest.
Yeah, nah, fuck that, man. People haven't even traveled 6 days. So 60 days at that is dope. You know what I mean? Like, shit. If I wouldn't, you know what I mean? If I didn't have a family, I'd be like, dog, please give me a bed. I'm rolling with you. Like, I'd buy a one-way ticket right now, and I'll be with you on the road, man. But, hey, one day, dog, we'll meet up, man, when you come by.
Oh, I'm coming.
Make up for it.
Oh, I'm coming by, and by the time we're done, you're going to be a damn mental trainer on Dollar Mental Health Club anyway. So
yes, sir.
By the time we're done, you're going to be training it up, which we're launching that shit sometime later in March. But so I'll be on the road too, doing mental training. So anybody can book a session with me, and I'll be maybe standing in some field in Montana somewhere.
Yes, sir. You already know. I told you I'm ready. I'm down whenever you are.
Yeah, it'd be good, man. So anything new, man, on is the business idea, the plan that you put into place still working, still folding out, unfolding as you plotted?
In a way. Just trying to iron out some little details and, you know, got some kinks along the road. But it's working itself out, you know. It's just with everything going on, I have a lot of shit on my plate right now. So I'm trying my best to, you know, do things differently.
Man, look at them trying. A lot of stuff to do. Like I ain't taught you shit.
Nah, trust me, man. I'm tackling it.
Like I ain't taught you shit, man. I'm hearing irrational tries. I'm hearing over-redundant a lot on my plate. Hey, man. Hey, man, come on, dog.
No, man. Please don't take it like that, man. So, it's going. I'll tell you that right now.
There you go.
It's going.
Yeah. All right. Sounds like we're going to have to chat about that one off air, man, if we hit a couple speed bumps that we got to get around. I like that you still reference them as just speed bumps, man, so not roadblocks. That's a good fucking change. I like that positive dialogue.
It's all perception, man. Yeah. All perception, my friend.
I like that, man. Speed bumps are definitely better than dialogue of roadblocks, and roadblocks means you stop. So, you know what I mean? I can't let you say you're trying, because you don't try anything. Anything you Alvin's going to do, you do. So try just means I'm not quite doing it just yet. That's what I hear when I hear I'm trying.
Well, I can say that to an extent, it is true. It holds truth to it because I haven't pulled the trigger.
There it is. See, I told you, man. I know you, man. You're not a 25-year-old father of some beautiful ones like that. Been doing it since 15 and good to the same woman for 10 years like that. Staying spiritual like you do, keeping some brothers out of trouble, not turning to your environments for all this time, despite. And so that's why I say there's nothing that Alvin won't do when he's going to do it. So if you're saying try, that just means you ain't fucking pulled the trigger. You're not doing it yet because you wouldn't be able to do all that shit you did. You know what I mean? And then tell me, I'm trying. You'd have been like, yeah, but it'll be done in 2 weeks. We have this. You'd have been dropping details on me.
You're right. You're right. You're 100% right on that.
Murderous. So at least you know that where you're at. So you're about to pull the trigger, though. That's good. It's good sometimes to wait and sit and hold the hand you got and look at the present.
Mm-hmm. Very true, sir. And it'll happen. It will happen.
Sir, me, motherfucker. What's wrong with you?
I don't know, man. I'm on air, so I guess I have to be fucking respectful.
No, you fucking don't, bitch.
Nah, I'm joking. I'll just call you what I want, I guess.
Damn right. Damn right, man. Nah, to see what happened is we walked through an uncomfortable moment, man, and you shared that with people that we listen to. That you do on the phone with me all the time. I challenge some shit all the time. And you respond. So this time you actually just shared it public and live on how you're able to be like, ah, you know what I mean? And you got close to something. We got close to something that may be bothering you, which is good. So you see the awareness. That means you're really wanting to pull the trigger in some minute. You may see it. So you know what we'll do is next time when we get off here, what is Saturday? Tomorrow, man, let's chat tomorrow. And we'll go more personal and deep about those speed bumps, yeah?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, definitely.
All right. Definitely. Yeah, I appreciate that. Dude, we finally got the fucking podcast on and loaded, man. And I'm honored that you got to be the last podcast in this very cognitive cave.
I am as well. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. It was, truth be told, I mean, it is, you know, online, it's virtual, but it was a bit nerve wracking. You know, I'm not going to lie. I'm being 100% honest with you.
Well, I'll set you up, dude. I actually set you up to be a little nerve-wracked on purpose.
Yeah.
I knew I was kind of chilling today and enjoying the cave and the vitamin D, but I knew you were coming in about 15 minutes. You said I'll be home in 15, so I went ahead and we set everything to launch. I posted it on Facebook, even though I know you weren't home and you're running late. And so I put it all to make you have to hurry the fuck up. When you had all morning and I can hear you right now going, bitch, we had all morning scheduled that I had set aside. And yeah. This bit, well, I kind of did that on purpose because I wanted you to feel what it's like to just have to get your shit together, run around real quick, cut the screen on and go live into what's really popping in your life, man.
That
was kind of a setup there. A little Obi-Wan Kenobi shit.
I know. I was good though. And I'm happy you did it that way because truth be told, I'd rather be in that state where I'm not comfortable just doing it, just going for it, fuck it.
Yeah, that's the spot, man. So I didn't want you to think about it and sit down and be like, okay, here we go, we're going live in 5 minutes.
I know, I got my notes and shit.
Yeah See, no, I didn't want that shit. I wanted my boy to just sit down and be like, motherfucker had all morning. Fucking 30 days and all morning, and this bitch picks right fucking now to post we're going live.
It's true, man. I was like, this dude's just waking up. I was like, yo, let me just do what I gotta do, man. I'm gonna come back. Yeah. We're going to knock this out.
I'll be home in 15 minutes. All right. Well, it's posted already. We're waiting on you.
I know, right? So where you at, man? The tribe is waiting.
That's it, man. But fuck, you did great. You'll be back on anyway, man. So you killed it on the first podcast, man, just chatting back and forth about what you experienced and more so. But let's chat next Sunday, you know, privately. We'll get through those fucking speed bumps, bro.
All right, brother.
Oh, cool, you're doing man. Good, though, man. Love you. Thanks for coming on, bro. We'll chat soon.
Love you, too, man.
Later. Bye.